Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Ganga Maya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Sarvaita Bhakti Vrindavan Ki Jai. Gopinath Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to the assembled devotees.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to the assembled devotees.
Hare Krishna.
All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Bhutarani Nivasesa Nivadi Paskatya Deshitarani. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Cha Vanshikalpa Chubhishcha Kipa Sundaryevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavabhyo Namo Namaha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. May 11, 2022, in Hawaii, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 31, Text 12. Kimva yogena sankena.
Kimva yogena sankena.
Nyasa swadhyaya yorapi. Kimva shreyo biranyascha.
Kimva shreyo.
Nayatratma Pradohari. Kim.
Kim Vajogena.
Kim.
Kim. Kim.
What is the use?
What is the use?
Va.
Va.
Or.
Oh.
Or.
Yogena.
Yogena.
My mystic yoga practice.
My mystic yoga practice.
Sankhena.
By
the study of Sankhya philosophy. Nyasa.
Nyasa.
By accepting sannyasa.
By accepting sannyasa.
Swadhyayaho.
Swadhyayaho.
And by study of Vedic literature.
By studying Vedic literature.
Api.
Api.
Even.
Even.
Kim.
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 What is the use?
What is the use?
Va.
Va.
Or.
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 Shreyo bihi.
Shreyo bihi.
By auspicious activities.
By auspicious activities.
Anyahai.
Anyahai.
Other.
Other. Other.
Cha.
Cha. Cha.
And.
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 Na.
Na. Na.
Never.
Never.
Yatra.
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 Where?
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 Atma Pradaha.
Atma Pradaha.
Full satisfaction of self.
Full satisfaction of self.
Hadihi.
Hadihi.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
The Supreme Personality of God.
Srila Prabhupada's translation. Transcendental practices that do not ultimately help one realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead are useless, be they mystic yoga practices, the analytical study of matter, severe austerity, the acceptance of sannyas, or the study of Vedic literature. All these may be very important aspects of spiritual advancement, but unless one understands the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, all these processes are useless. Purport. In Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya 24.109, it is said, Bhakti Vina Kevala Gyane Mukti Nahi Haya Bhakti Sadhana Kari Ye Prapta Brahmalaya. Impersonalists do not take to devotional service, but take to other practices, such as the analytical study of the material elements, the discrimination between matter and spirit, and the mystic yoga system. These are beneficial only insofar as they are complementary to devotional service. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore told Sanatana Goswami that without a touch of devotional service, Jnana Yoga and Sankhya philosophy cannot give one the desired results. The impersonalist wish to merge into the Supreme Brahman. However, merging into the Supreme Brahman also requires a touch of devotional service. The absolute truth is realized in three phases: impersonal Brahman, Paramatma, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All these require a touch of devotional service. Sometimes it is actually seen that these Mayavadis also chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, although their motive is to merge into the Brahman effulgence of the Absolute. The yogis also at times take to chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, but their purpose is different from that of the bhaktas. In all processes, karma, jnana, or yoga, bhakti is required. That is the purport of this verse. Kim va yogena sankhyena nyasa swadhyaya yor api? Is everybody there? Kim va shreya
yoga? Yes. Everything's fine.
Okay. And over again, when Narada is talking to the sons of Daksha in a positive way earlier in the Bhagavatam with Savaipam Soparo Dharmo and the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that everything is ultimately useless, or Shravamevihi Kevalam, everything is ultimately useless if there's no devotional service. This is also the point at the end of the 17th chapter, right, of the Bhagavad Gita, that everything is ultimately useless without bhakti. You know, if you don't, if what you're doing is not, right, Ashraya hutam datam tapas satam kritam chayat asarichi chate partha nachatat prajanohiha, that if there's no faith in the Supreme, that everything is just useless. There's no point to it. There's no reason to it. And this is a kind of a heavy statement, I think, for most people, whether it's said in the positive, as in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, as we already quoted, or whether it's said in the negative, it's just like, wow, only bhakti. I mean, it may come across to people as being very, very sectarian, perhaps. But this is the point of understanding what is the essence of our problem. The essence of our problem is that we've forgotten, we're unaware of, we're blind to our loving relationship with the Lord. That's the essence of our problem. We were talking about the other day in a class here in North Carolina on the 10th canto about feeling separation from Krishna, and how everyone feels separation from something. I mean, it may be, you know, a person you're geographically distant from, or someone who's died, or even some object you're looking for, you know, your wallet, your keys, your phone. And everyone feels that something is not quite right in their lives, that something is missing. You know, human beings may not feel that way at every moment, but at least there are moments in our lives where we just, you know, for an ordinary person, just says, is this all there is? What else is there in life? You know, I guess this is as good as it gets, but something appears to be missing. So there's something essential in life, and that is a loving relationship with the Supreme. And there's nothing else that fills that gap. You know, it just doesn't. I mean, even on the mundane level, if a person doesn't have a loving relationship with at least somebody or something else, you know, if they don't even have an animal to love, then their life is very empty, even if they have a lot of possessions, or even if they have a lot of fame. So what to speak of if we're not loving God? And this is the essence of our illusion and suffering. The essence of our illusion and suffering is not that we don't have enough money, or that we don't have enough power or possessions or something like that, but it's the lack of a loving relationship. And people try to fill this gap in various ways. And here Prabhupada's, Narada Muni is looking at Yoga Sankhena Nyasa, and studying the Vedas also, Swadhyayo, and auspicious activities, Shreyo B. So we can look at some of these and see why they come up lacking. I mean, I think it's important because this tendency to want to do something other than bhakti or is very strong in us. You know, many times we think that our failure to progress as quickly as we'd like is just due to offenses, and maybe it can be. But it can also be due to trying to mix our bhakti with other things, doing karma mishra bhakti or gyan mishra bhakti or yoga mishra bhakti. It can be due to covering our bhakti with karma and gyan yoga. And sometimes it can be, which we're not really going to talk about much today, it can be doing bhakti in ways that are not nourishing for ourselves. But let's look here at this concept of putting karma, gyan, and yoga as more important, or mixing them, or having them cover our bhakti. I mean, we could say that this is a kind of offense to not have complete faith in the chanting of the holy name and to maintain material attachments. We can also put that in the category of an offense. So it could be, or it can be in the category of we're just kind of confused about what is bhakti. So let's look at processes, and we're going to look basically at action, intention, and love. Those three categories, if we want to actually be satisfied, atma prado, or yad yatma supracidati, prasidati, to be happy. What kind of action do we need to do? What kind of intention do we need to do? And what kind of love do we need to have? So we're kind of looking at what do we do physically, what kind of behavior do we need to have, what kind of conviction do we need to have, and what kind of emotion and desire do we need to have. So what kind of processes do we need to do? Well, we need to do the processes of bhakti. We need to do the processes of devotion. And these are, of course, delineated by Srila Rupa Goswami. They're activities that have the effect of both demonstrating love that's already within our heart and growing love. And that's not a difficult thing to understand, even materially, that if you want a loving relationship with someone, you might give them a gift of flowers, and the flowers demonstrate the love that you already have, and the flowers also help grow that love, right? Or maybe some other gift that's appropriate to them. You know, you do something for them that helps to express the love that's already there, the relationship that's already there, and helps to grow that love. So we might not know what those are, what kind of activities would help to grow our love with God and express our love with God. So Rupa Goswami has delineated these. And you can say that there are 9, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, etc. But he's also taken them and expanded them to 64. He's told us what are most important. He's told us what are most potent. Now, one can also do other spiritual processes that complement bhakti. So we also learn this from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that things like pious activities, Shreyobi, there can be pious activities that are complementary to bhakti, that help bhakti, that support bhakti. So I was at a meeting with the GBC today, and one member made the very important point that it's not like there's some kind of competition between bhakti and varnashram, but varnashram is meant to be supportive of bhakti. Varnashram means pious activities. That's basically what it means, that you want to be a good person, and good is defined by your status of life. To be a good person when you're, you know, a young married man with a wife and children is a little different than when you want to be a good person when you're an old retired man with grandchildren. It's the definitions are a little different. Or to be a good person when you're a plumber is a little bit different than if you're going to be a good person when you're a soldier. So Varnashram is defining what is good, but the concept is to be a pious person. So it supports bhakti to be a pious person. It's complementary. Or studying the philosophy of Krishna, studying the Gyan in relationship to Krishna, studying the philosophy that's that's given in the Bhagavad Gita, that's given in the Bhagavad Gita, that's given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's complementary to bhakti. And even Sankhya, you know, we're studying the Sankhya of Lord Kapiladev, which of course, the Sankhya of Lord Kapiladev is basically a mix of Gyan, Yoga, and Bhakti. Not much karma, but Gyan, Yoga, and Bhakti is mixed together into Sankhya. So to study and to practice this, that kind of Sankhya, which Krishna explains somewhat himself in the Bhagavad Gita, and Lord Kapiladev explains, that is complementary to Bhakti. Right? To practice Nyasa, to practice detachment from the world. The 15th and 16th item, 16th for sure, maybe not 15th, but item of devotional service deals with detachment. That one should not be very affected by gain and loss and lamentation and jubilation in this world. And Rupa Goswami quotes this verse, that is, if we're really affected by grief and lamentation and anger and envy, we can't think about Krishna. So if we want to practice detachment from the world in order to think about Krishna, that's certainly very favorable to bhakti. And then our ordinary activities in this world, you know, if we think about it, it takes a lot of work and time and effort just to keep the body alive. It's actually sort of amazing how much time and effort it takes just to keep the body alive, you know, just to get food. if you want to grow food, or if you want to, whether you grow food or whether you buy it, you know, it's a big deal. And then to maintain a shelter for the body, to maintain clothes for the body. I mean, of course, we do find that there are people in the Vedic tradition and in other traditions as well who minimize their bodily necessities so much that they live without shelter. Some of them live without clothing. And they just, whatever food they're given, of course somebody is endeavoring for that food, I suppose, or can be just the fruits and roots that they find in the forest, and they do nothing to maintain their body. The famous Jain saint Mahavir lived like that. But generally for most of us, that would not be favorable. So even ordinary activities, again, if we do them in the complementary to bhakti, then they can help our bhakti. But our processes of self-realization are primarily the 64 angas of bhakti. So the 64 angas of bhakti, other aspects and ordinary activities that complement, those should be our actions. All right, but that's not sufficient to provide us with actual satisfaction. And I'm sure that we have experienced, either with ourselves or with others, that if people are just doing these external activities, it doesn't give them yadyatma supersedity. It doesn't give them full satisfaction. So then there also has to be an intention. There has to be a sankalpa. And Prabhupada talks about that in this purport, that mayavadis also chant, may also chant, but their motive is different. And the yogis chant, but their motive is different. And I often talk about, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ramvas Vilas, a gentleman who was helping Raghunath Bhatta in his journey to Jagannath Puri, and he was helping carry Raghunath Bhatta's bags, and he was always chanting Hari Ram, Hari Rama, Rama Rama, Hari Hari, or Ram Ram Ram, or Jai Shri Ram, Jai Ram, like that. He was always chanting the names of Ram, and he was helping one of the six Goswamis, and he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but he didn't have the right sankalpa. His sankalpa was, I want to merge with Ram, and therefore the Lord didn't pay any attention to him. The Lord didn't pay any attention to him, not out of mean-spiritness. The Lord has no mean-spiritness. But because Ram Das Vilas, he had no desire for a relationship. He didn't want a relationship with the Lord. He wanted to be the Lord. If somebody has no desire for a relationship with us, then we will often not be very... We'll reciprocate with that. We won't be very involved with having a relationship with them either. So it was simply, yeyatamam prapajante, tamsataiva bhajamyaham. So the conviction is also important. So because, as Prabhupada's saying here, people with other convictions can engage in the activities of bhakti, but it's not bhakti. Or Prabhupada will talk about, don't hear from professional reciters. So those are people, they're reciting the Bhagavatam. It may be the main thing they're doing in their life is studying the Bhagavatam and teaching the Bhagavatam. But their sankalpa is karma. Their sankalpa is, let me get money and let me get fame and like that. And the Mayavadis may be chanting in order to merge with the Lord, and the yogis may be chanting to get power. So what should our sankalpa be? You know, there's several options. So one is just to get gross material things. The professional reciters who just chant for gross material things, or who do service for gross material things. And we find this even among our devotees. You know, people who are engaged full-time in service as they want a visa to a Western country, or because, you know, they just want a place to eat and sleep, that without doing a whole lot of work. Or, you know, I can just do some sadhana and then I work for 3 hours a day, and for that, you know, I get nice food and a place to stay. So there are people who do that, or they may come to a Sangha of devotees even so they can get power and influence. And the yogis they're engaging in the processes to get subtle powers. And again, as a person, even if they're not ostensibly an Astanga yogi, they may be doing that. I like how Bhaktivedanta Maharaj makes the point that by engaging in the process of bhakti, we get an understanding of psychology. We can more and more and more understand other people's psychology. It's clearing our consciousness, and that can give us subtle power. And subtle power isn't just that you can become, you know, lighter than a feather and enter into the stone and create a planet. But one does get some subtle powers, and we find that people engaging in bhakti actually have that kind of power. Or one can be engaging in the processes of bhakti to gain liberation in a very selfish way. I mean, even gaining the four kinds of Vaishnava liberation, putting that above service, is not exactly what we want in pure devotional service. But what to speak if you're engaging in the process of bhakti to gain impersonal liberation? And I've certainly met people like this. Perhaps all of you have. I mean, I've met people whose goal is to merge with the Lord. There was one gentleman that I knew who very much liked Krishna, very much liked chanting Hare Krishna, but his goal was to become one with Hanuman. And, you know, at the time he was dying, so he asked everyone to chant about Hanuman, and he was saying the name of Hanuman, and his purpose was he wanted to merge with Hanuman. So and he was very, very favorable to Krishna consciousness in the sense he would visit temples and he would chant Hare Krishna and he would take prasadam, but his motive was oneness. You know, I can imagine if there's somebody being your friend and hanging out with you because they want to become you. So that's also a sankalpa. And then there's those who are engaging in the process of bhakti to please Krishna, but they want to please Krishna to get something for themselves, whatever it may be. You know, these other people, they may not be thinking about pleasing Krishna at all. Getting gross material things, gaining powers, gaining liberation. They might not even be thinking, what does Krishna feel about it? You know, like if let's say you work at a job, or somebody works at a job, and they don't have a relationship with the employer, and they're not trying to please the employer in any way, but they're just thinking, you know, if I get this job, I'll get this and this and this. And then there are those who actually try to develop a personal relationship with the employer, but for their own purposes. So there can be those who do ostensibly the activity of bhakti to get gross material things, to get subtle material things, to get liberation. And then there are those who are apparently trying to please Krishna to get any of those things. So there are those who are trying to get those things without caring whether or not Krishna is pleased, without realizing that Krishna's pleasure is even important. And then there are those who are trying to get those things, gross material things, subtle material things, liberation, but they know they have to please Krishna for it. And I think it's safe to say that a large portion of religious people, perhaps in our Vaishnav Sanghas as well, are in this category. And some of them may not even be aware of it. You know, I want to please Krishna so that I can have a happy family, so that I can be healthy, so that I can be rich, so that I can be well regarded in human society. And how do we know that that's our motive is what happens when those things fall apart. How do we respond? It's a very, very simple test. You know, if I'm losing my money, or if people start speaking ill of me, or I have trouble in my family, or my health starts breaking, you know, does that affect my devotion? Does that affect my activities? Do I just say, well, what's the use of chanting my rounds anymore? And we run into this all the time. I mean, it's something that's not at all uncommon. And we run into it even with people who've been chanting Hare Krishna for decades, that something will happen in their life, and then their enthusiasm wanes. You know, that they were making, as Krishna explains in this 32nd chapter of the 10th canto, they had a mercantile relationship with Krishna. I'm pleasing you so you will please me. And if you don't please me, you know, well, why should I bother to please you anymore? You know, like the guy working at a job, and he's been working there for 15 years, and he gets passed over for a promotion and a raise, and then he just says, well, I'm going to quit. So if we treat Krishna like that. And then the ultimate sankalpa, the only thing that satisfies the self, ironically, is to stop thinking about satisfying the self. So, ahoy tukiya pratyata, and anya bilasita shunyam, where the sankalpa is just to please Krishna in order to please Krishna, not to please Krishna to get anything. And, of course, trying to do that artificially, when you actually want something for yourself and you're just pretending that you want to please Krishna just to please Krishna, isn't sustainable. Again, as soon as we don't get the things that we think we deserve by trying to please Krishna, then one becomes disturbed. But we can work in that direction at least when we understand that trying to please Krishna just to please Krishna means that what we're doing is we're filling ourselves with love for the perfect person. And when we are filled with love, yad yatma supersedati, that gives us, or here atma pradaha, that gives us full satisfaction of the self. What we really want, what we really need, the emptiness that we sometimes feel in life, that we're sometimes aware of in life, is because we're not filled with our own loving propensities. We're not allowing ourselves, we're basically blocking ourselves from feeling full, absolute, unconditional love for the perfect person. And there's many reasons, of course, why we don't want to do that. So that brings us from our intention, that we have an intention to please Krishna, just to please Krishna, of course, to our emotion and desire. So doing bhakti only satisfies us if we have an emotion and desire of attachment for Krishna, and that we're at least cultivating it, that at least we experiment with and try and be curious about what does it feel like to really love Krishna, to find our satisfaction in loving Krishna. What is that experience? You know, in all of us conditioned souls, we want this, again, but we have hesitancy about it. Because when I fully and completely love unconditionally, I become totally vulnerable. Like Krishna is hesitant, Rupa Goswami says, to give somebody this because it makes him vulnerable also. That Krishna comes under the control of the jiva who fully loves him, and the jiva comes under the control of Krishna whom he fully loves. Now, of course, we're always under the control of Krishna, but it's a little different. I mean, Krishna comes so much under the control of someone who fully loves him that he says, apichet sucharacharo, the person who loves me fully can do no wrong. I mean, we see again this phenomena reflected in this world, which is why we're afraid of it. We see people in this world who love fully, and therefore their beloved can do no wrong. And so even if their beloved is a criminal or whatever, they don't see the fault in their beloved being blinded by love. And so we're afraid. We're afraid that we'll be abused. We're afraid that we'll be betrayed. We're afraid that we'll be mistreated. We're afraid that we'll bare our soul literally and then somehow or other be misused, because materially that is what happens in so many cases. But again, even Krishna's hesitant. You know, do I really want to let this person experience the flow of their own love? Because not only does it make them vulnerable, but Krishna knows it makes him vulnerable. It's the ultimate relationship of vulnerability, but is the only thing. There's nothing else that will give us Atma Pradaha, that will give us ultimate satisfaction. And how interesting that the only thing that will give us ultimate satisfaction is already within us. It's already in the nature of the soul. It's not something, as Rupa Goswami says, to be acquired from some other source. Someone asked me today if I was interested in reading something that they wrote about how one has to acquire bhakti from some other source, and I said, not really. That what we want is already within us. And it's interesting, Gopavinda Palprabhu, who lives in Hilo, the last time I was there, he was making this point very strongly, that this tendency to want to fully give ourselves in love is so obviously part of us, because we keep trying to do it materially. We keep trying to give all of our love to another human or to an animal or even to a cause, a righteous cause, or to our country or something like that, to our football team. But this tendency, and it's there, as Prabhupada said, as preface to Nectar Devotion, even in the animals. You know, one of my friends on Mother's Day posted pictures on social media of animal parents loving their children. And, you know, this tendency, the animals will, especially the mother, they're willing to sacrifice their lives for their children. The bond between the mother and the child, even among many of the animals, is stronger than the romantic bond. So this concept of giving oneself in love, this is really the emotion and the desire that becomes this overwhelming attachment, where even a fraction of a second away from the others, sunyayitam jagat sarvam govindan virahiname, seems like a whole eternity is passing. It's basically unbearable, right? That there's that much of an intense desire, and one is getting such a taste. We have here pradaha, satisfaction. One is getting such a taste and such pleasure in the association of the other and in loving the other and in pleasing the other parandrisva nivartite, that these other intentions, these other sankalpas, appear to be just like imagination things. Right, there's that famous verse, I think, by Prabodhananda Swami, that the heavenly happiness, it just appears like some kind of imagination. It doesn't have any meaning anymore. It's not just an intellectual conviction, but it just, you know, I always give the example that if you have your own, you know, mango tree in your backyard and you're eating tree-ripened, organic, fresh-picked local mangoes, then some, you know, artificially mango flavored sugared water doesn't appeal to you. Why would I want that if I have the real mango? Yeah. And then one feels a sense of wonder and fascination with Krishna. So Rupa Goswami says that the secondary staiba, the secondary rasa of wonder, adbhuta, pervades all of the other rasas. He talks about which rasas are compatible and incompatible, and everything's compatible with a sense of wonder. And he gives the example that if you love somebody, then even very otherwise insignificant things they do will fill you with delight. you know, parents are delighted when their little baby says mama and dada, although, you know, the vast majority of babies in the world are going to say mama and dada. It's not something extraordinary. Or their baby starts to crawl, or the baby starts to walk, you know, or their child wins some award when they're 5 years old for tying their shoelaces, and the parents frame it and put it on the wall. So when we love somebody, even very insignificant things they do are wonderful. And when we don't have affection for somebody, even very extraordinary things they do are not wonderful. There's that example of a very famous musician. People would pay $100 a seat to hear him perform on the violin, and he had a violin worth millions of dollars, and he's playing one of the most intricate violin pieces ever written, one of the most difficult pieces, but he's playing on the side of the road like a street musician, and so nobody pays any attention to him. Because they have no affection for him, they don't consider what he's doing wonderful. And when he's playing in the concert hall, they have some feeling of affection, and therefore whatever he does is wonderful. So this feeling of affection is tied with this feeling of wonder. So when our emotions are full of this deep attachment, this deep taste and pleasure, and this deep wonder, then our bhakti is complete. So if we're doing the external behaviors of bhakti, whether in the 64 andas or ordinary activities that complement bhakti, when our intention at least is to please Krishna, just to please him, at least on an intellectual level, we're aiming for that, and we're self-correcting when we find that we've swerved from that. And when our emotions and our desires are to have, at least we're experimenting with, we're curious about, we're trying, we're endeavoring, we're cultivating this attachment for Krishna, this feeling of separation from Krishna, this taste and pleasure in Krishna, and this wonder and fascination with Krishna, then we feel satisfied. And nothing else will feel satisfactory, because it's not who we are. It's artificial. Trying to gain activities in this world, or renouncing this world, or studying philosophy, or getting impersonal liberation, or getting subtle powers, they're all artificial. They're not of the nature of the soul. And therefore, kimva, or what is the use of them? So questions, comments, corrections, additions, subtractions. Ramananda, can you unmute people? I don't know if he's even there.
As I said, I need time. I'm driving.
Well, write your questions in the chat then. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Hare Krishna.